Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored as always by 50 West Brewing Company. Owner Bobby Slattery, he's better known to you all as Optimistic Bobby for his rosy Bengals takes, but he truly has something special going on down on Route 50 in Newtown. They combine delicious beers, like my personal favorite, the best IPA anywhere, coast to coast, as well as always rotating seasonal selections. They combine that with an active lifestyle, running groups, sand volleyball leagues, cycling, canoeing, all that based out of the Pro Works. Go on down there, eat some fantastic food, drink some great local craft beer in what I honestly think is the best brewery environment our city has going. Anyway, if you get a chance, head on down to 50 West Brewing Company. Always a great time where every beer is a journey. Join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Every week, your Bengals beat writers Paul Danner Jr. and Fletcher Page take you inside Paul Brown Stadium. We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. That's right, it is the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by our great friends down at 50 West Brewing Company. Paul Danner Jr. here with my man Fletcher Page. We are officially in the draft countdown, where we're under 4 weeks now to D-Day.
Oh, draft, I see it. I see what you did there.
You like that, yeah. We're getting closer. So we're officially in the 4 weeks out draft routine. So welcome to the cyclone of draft coverage.
Yeah, I'm ready to experience the process.
You got to trust it.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust it yet, but I'm going to evaluate it.
Well, I'm actually excited about this. So we're going to have a run of different guests. To help out with bringing some different draft perspective from different angles every week now until the draft. So this week on today's episode, I'm going to have Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports, who has been he has done 30 mock drafts. He's been doing them since September, and you know he does one every Monday, and. First of all, if you see Ryan, give him a hug. Second of all, he is an expert at this point on what the dynamics of the top 10 could be. And so I thought that he would be the perfect person to set the stage for us for what this month is going to be, of what the dynamics of all the teams at the top of the draft looks like. Who wants what? Who might make a move? What are scouts saying about how teams might trade or whatever? What could be smokescreens? All of that is a great opportunity to catch up with him, who he's really focused on that stuff over really the last 4 or 5 months. So I'm excited to have him on, and he's a good friend of mine in the business and a hysterical dude. So got a long conversation coming with him. That'll be coming up later on in the podcast. We are going to debate, you know, embrace debate, Fletcher.
I'm not afraid of confrontation.
So I've heard. You know, I'm not going to dive into the confrontational weekend that you've had, but we'll just say that you and Duke Energy probably are a bit at odds right now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm officially a member of this Cincinnati community.
Yeah.
Because Duke Energy let me down in a big way.
As they can do. So you and eight customer service reps experience confrontation. I don't think this will be as confrontational as those were for you. However, we're going to rank the Bengals' positional needs of this draft. We're going to go 1 through 12. So 12 different positions, essentially, when we break down interior and tack and outside line play, you know, corner, safety, all that. Special teams, don't forget that. We'll get through all of those. We'll rank them by need. That's going to be the order that the 12-part series that we do later on this month on breaking down the Bengals in this draft and their needs is going to come in. It's going to be the order that we decide right here what their most pressing needs are.
I might put a twist on what you've done here because I'm just going to...
You're already twisting?
I'm going to admit that you have done a little bit more legwork on this exercise than I have. And so I might go use your ranking and then maybe I can assign a value or a number to the position.
No, that's fair. Well, I can...
To try to agree or disagree with you.
Or you can guess where I have it.
Okay,
And then we'll see if you agree with it. Is what we'll do. So we're gonna do that. There is some news. I guess we'll run down some. I don't know how newsy it is, but we've got it's visit week essentially. You've got guys are gonna start to come through. The ones that are reported, that are out there that we know about. I mean, their usual suspect stuff. Right? I mean, that we know: Devin Bush, Devin White, Rashawn Gary from Michigan. What you're going to see, and those that surface, every team gets 30 visits. They use the Bengals use them a variety of ways. Typically, you'll see a big group of people that they want to check out for the top pick, and they want to really dive closer into that. And then you'll see another group of guys they're maybe interested in, think they could peg in the middle rounds, but a bigger group of guys they think could be late round picks that they don't have medicals on because they didn't go to the combine, but they like their tape. You know, you don't want to draft a guy who you don't have a medical report on. It's a frightening situation. And they also can get a little bit of a hop on if they don't get drafted. There's a connection there when you're trying to sell them on coming to your team as an undrafted free agent. We've seen that over the years, actually, with a number of their undrafted guys where they said, yeah, I was picking between two or three teams, but the Bengals had brought me in, so I already felt a connection to them, so I went there. This is part of that, too. So they try to use them all in different ways. So some of those are going to start surfacing. Those are some that we know of officially right now. I'm sure that you will see the names that you're seeing mocked to the Bengals are the names that you're going to see come through here for the most part. So those are we know who those guys are. Also, we have another free agent visiting. I think, you're going to see this is like the third wave of guys that are interested in. It's Bills tackle Jordan Mills. So the Bengals-Bills free trade agreement continues. Is it possible that, the other 30 teams, the server doesn't work to them? It only connects between Buffalo and Cincinnati. Why? I don't understand why. You could have three. If they were to sign, we'll see what happens. I mean, he's here. As we're recording this, they're probably trying to figure out if they're going to lock up a deal to bring in some competition at right tackle and left tackle, really. But you could have Cordy Glenn, John Miller, and Jordan Mills all come over to the Bengals offensive line.
Got the Bills band back together here.
You know, if I'm trying to trade pieces with another team's offensive line, I'd try to get all those Cowboys guys instead of those Bills guys. I don't know what the obsession is. But I would think that bringing in a little competition over there wouldn't hurt. But, I mean, this would be a true third wave, no risk, $1 million, $2 million type deal where it's just let's just have a few more bodies here that have played in the NFL that fit a profile. And I think that's probably what this is.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting how we can figure out how to get Bobby Hart into each podcast, but how different the tackle position is from just this time last year, the way it looks.
And it's just as, it's the same right now. I mean, the tackle position still has Bobby Hart and some other dudes who would prove to be not very good. And maybe, because Obwehi and Fisher, this time last year, there was hope for them that Frank Pollock could come in and make that happen, and it didn't. And so it's really kind of where it was, that spot. You have a better right guard, and in theory, I'm going to say that they're going to have a better right tackle. It's whoever they take early in this draft.
Right, you've traded upside, which did not come to fruition, with little bit more known commodity, reliability there.
Yeah, I mean,
in the build two builds guys, if it comes.
Well, if that happens, I mean, I think they definitely improved to somebody who is more than serviceable at guard, and I think there's a good chance that if a guy is a first or second round pick at tackle for the Bengals, that he's gonna probably beat them out. And it's like, if that guy comes in and wins the job, he should win a job. If he's a first or second round pick or a third round pick. We saw this last year in Baltimore. They selected Orlando Brown in the third round. He came in. He won the job. He ended up playing all year, played fairly well. I don't think anybody's against that happening. It's the guy comes in and proves he can do it. Somebody will be in that competition. Somebody that they take in the first 2 days of the draft will be in that competition. So, as will Jordan Mills, potentially, if they end up signing him as he came through. That's about it with the signings that have happened. I don't think you'll see much more. If you do, they'll be of this variety. You know, guys that guy's still out there. Maybe something after the draft. But anyway, so that's kind of where the news is at this week. Long meetings for the coaches as they get ready for next week, which is the players returning. Big first day, April 9th. They'll be in there for the week. We'll be in there next week. So they're starting on Tuesday instead of Monday, and I think it's partially because of Gio's wedding.
Yeah, Gio, it really worked out for Gio because I think they can only go 4 days.
Yes.
That first week, so the Monday, Tuesday, it makes for a nice story that they've arranged all this around Gio's nice overseas wedding. But they can only go 4 days anyway, so it didn't matter if they started Monday or Tuesday. But that gives Gio an extra day to sort of get back from his wedding and then get going with the football.
I don't know, stole a three-day weekend from a good three. The extra Monday is a bad three-day weekend. The extra Friday, good three-day
that's
weekend.
That's what you want. Yeah.
Yeah, so they kind of stole that from some of his teammates. However, he also is giving a lot of free alcohol and a good time in Italy to some other of his teammates that are over there. Which, by the way, congratulations to Tyler Eifert. Got engaged. As you know, anybody can do that.
Yeah, that's not the most difficult part.
No, it gets harder.
Yeah.
It gets harder. Tyler Eifert went over to Italy and got engaged, according to his Instagram. So good for him. Everybody's having babies and getting engaged and having weddings. It's the 20-something life, boy.
Yeah, Eifert's really living his best life with his brother front and center. Purdue having a good run through the tournament.
Yeah.
Eifert got some airtime.
Dude, Eifert drinking Miller Lights on the side is just
on brand.
Yeah, it really is. Which it took me back to the BTS this past year when Eifert said it was asked if his mullet could talk, what would it say? And he'd say, toss me a Miller Light.
That's right.
He is true. He is true to himself. I loved it. So congrats to Tyler on that. All right, well, that's kind of where the news is at. And next week, next Tuesday, they'll start. They'll basically go all the way through until June 11th through the 13th with some different capacity of workouts, voluntary mini camps, mandatory mini camps. It's all basically the same. It's practices and workouts and stuff. Some have different allowances for what you can do. But it ends up being a couple months of work and, you know, a big deal this year because they have changed over so much stuff, graphics and the way the building is arranged and all this other stuff, trying to make it feel players show up day one knowing it's new and fresh and very different. And all these other new coaches are going to be here. There's going to be a lot more of them. They need to send a first impression message and get guys to believe and buy in immediately. So that will be a big deal next week. We'll get more into that next week. Let's talk draft. So I've got my list. If I'm doing the positional rankings, I've got my list. Let's see if you can guess. Can you guess my top three? Because, I mean, we've been talking about so many of them. This is most pressing need, not where they'll go, but most pressing need by position. And again, this includes defensive tackle, and then you also have edge rusher. So, and it has interior offensive line and offensive tackle. So,
Are,
and then cornerback and safety. It's not DB. So, you've got end up with 12 spots by that. So, under that, Can you guess? What do you think is my top three?
Okay, well, I think that in no particular order, I think offensive tackle, linebacker.
No, I'm asking for a particular order.
Okay, in particular order. Offensive tackle is one. Linebacker, inside linebacker is two. And interior defensive line is three.
Okay. You have the top three correct. You'd have been better off if it was in no particular order. No, you just flip-flop tackle and linebacker. Okay, yeah. I have linebacker number one. I don't think they have served that. I think it's a massive hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say at least, I mean, they do have somebody at they tackle that played last year. Even if it wasn't great, I still – they don't have – the play at linebacker last year was worse than the play at right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
That's saying something. And they haven't added anybody really at either. But I think linebacker, because they don't have anybody that fits that profile at all, is a bigger need in my opinion.
Yeah.
Positionally.
Well, the way I went
But
about
I could
this,
hear their argument.
Well, the way I addressed this once you introduced this idea was just to assign 1 through 10 grade of need. And so I have two positions that are a 10.
Right.
It's the two, top two there, right?
The
tackle
two.
And linebacker.
Yeah. And I think you get into, so yeah, you mentioned interior line. I am tempted because, look, Andrew Billings is, he's in a contract year, and he's been okay. I don't have a big problem with Andrew Billings. I mean, you could use somebody better in there. And, you know, I don't have a problem with another three technique. I'm a big Ryan Glasgow fan. I happen to think that he played really well last year before he tore his ACL. And I think he's got high upside and could really be a really good player. You have Geno in there who's getting older, but you just obviously said you were okay with that because you paid him all that money. So I'm tempted to put edge rusher above defensive tackle. I don't right now. I have edge rusher fourth because they really didn't rush the passer well last year. And when you look at, you know, Carlos Dunlap whatever happened there, I don't know. But after the first 5-6 weeks of the season, Carlos and Geno went off the map, off the reservation. Oddly, about the same time that Carl Lawson left. So you got Carl Lawson coming off his ACL. You've got Hubbard, who I think was a nice player. I think what you saw last year is probably what Hubbard's going to be, an okay type of guy. And, you know, I think there's a lot of good edge rushers here, too. I could be just because I think it's a more important position. I could maybe put edge above.
Yeah, in terms of where teams might want to invest big and the way that this draft shakes up, the defensive line interior and off the edge, I'm interested in how that plays out across the league, not just with Cincinnati. There's so many of those guys in this draft.
Yeah, particularly at the top end.
Yeah.
If the Bengals want a first round graded edge rusher, it will be there at 11.
Right.
There will be one. Who it is, if they feel like they fit, that is an option. And I think it's one that you have to look into depending on how it falls. Now, again, it's hard because at number 11, you really have to focus on getting blue chip players, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this team does not have enough blue chip players. You're talking all pro possible, Pro Bowl level guys. How many of them are there, right? Four? AJ, Geno, and Geno didn't play to that level last year, even though he got to the Pro Bowl, but he has that potential. Joe Mixon. Boyd. I think Boyd could play at a Pro Bowl level.
He can.
Especially as a two receiver. William Jackson, maybe Jesse Bates can be. I think he's more of a like a fringe Pro Bowl that you're happy with, like a above average but not blue chip.
But once you get past three players, you're moving into could be.
Yeah, William. So, I mean, William, AJ. You could make Joe. You could make arguments. You would stop there.
Yeah.
And as many low as three, as many as five or six. You know, you need 8 to 10 to make a Super Bowl run, at least. Blue chip type players. I mean, you really do. Or you need Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, the unicorns. Like, you know what I mean? It's like that's how it has to go. They need more. And so if you're sitting there at 11 and do you believe that one of these tackles is a blue chip player? Do you believe that Devin Bush, if it's just him, is a blue chip player? Or would you go to another position that we, of the four we didn't just mention, and go there? Or would, and maybe edge fits that, because there probably would be a blue chip edge available. Maybe that's how this happens.
Yeah, because I think the top 10 is interesting, because if you start to – you throw the Devins in there. If the Devins – and Bush especially is moving up. If both of those –
mock drafts.
In
yeah.
mock drafts, yeah. But he's a guy that was like a fringe first rounder just like 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's odd how this happens once people start actually talking to the scouts and the coaches, and it's the real evaluations get out there, how guys rise. Teams' boards don't really move much between, like, hardly at all between mid-January.
Right.
And, I mean, even with the combine and stuff, that shakes it a little. These guys, boards don't move that much. I think just because there's so much time, you know, I think teams will start second-guessing the original evaluation.
We've got to talk ourselves in or out of.
And I think they do that, too. I think they talk themselves in or out of certain guys. Absolutely.
But to the point, though, is that there's at least two linebackers in play there. There's a couple quarterbacks, and then like a guy like T.J. Hockenson, a tight end. And the next thing you know, you could be looking at Brian Burns still available as an edge rusher at 11.
And you're thinking about it, for sure.
Yeah.
Or any of the – I mean, shoot, Rashawn Gary.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, who is the kid out of Michigan. And we get into that, and later this month, I'm going to have the PFF guys on, and they have a very different perspective on Rashawn Gary, based on lack of production at Michigan, and then you get into the production versus projection. There's a lot to it. The bottom line is what I just mentioned to you, and what we just talked about were the top four positions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so,
and three of them were defensive front seven.
Right.
They need to restock their defense with blue chip players. There are not enough of them there in particular. I mean, when we mentioned blue chip players, William Jackson, and then we went through, well, Joe, AJ, Tyler, right? Offense.
Mm-hmm.
They need some more playmakers on their defense. And I think when you have that thought, with this being so top heavy in front seven in this draft, it feels like the most snug fit.
Yeah, definitely. Now, for the next little portion of your list,
yeah.
I think there's a group of positions that are not like an immediate 10 or even an immediate 7, but they are going through a transitional. This is a crossroads for this next group for me, and I want to see how you ranked them. So okay. I think quarterback, wide receiver, and tight end. There's all three of those positions. There are questions that have to be answered by 2020.
Yeah.
And so those questions could be answered at the end of this month, or they might have to push them. So
I have quarterback next in line.
Okay. So I wanted to see how you went that way.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I have a couple others that I think are sort of in that mix, and then there's another fall off. I mean, even Jeff Driskel at backup is not the answer. I mean, I don't think that Jeff Driskel is going to be the second quarterback on this team when – the year comes around. I think that it will be whoever it is that they select in this draft. Now, would that be, again, would that be, you know, because we're, and I'm going to get into this a lot with Ryan Wilson. I want to ask him about quarterbacks that could be there, who could fall. How real does it sound that Haskins or Murray or Drew Locke coming up into the top 10, which I feel like is a real possibility. How likely is that to happen? And if that does happen, you know, I had a conversation with Duke Tobin this week, and I'm going to have a story on some of that stuff later on this week. And we talked a bit about quarterback and what do you do? And, you know, the thought, what he basically said was, look, you evaluate it the same way you would any other position. And when if your pick comes up and you have that guy at that position ranked as the highest, he's there for a reason. You go through that process of ranking them like that for the reason, and that's what you're gonna go for. And I buy into that. You know, so many teams move up for QBs and because they get worried they're not going to get them and they fall in love with a guy. And some of them end up going right in about this range. So there's a possibility that if you see the Dwayne Haskins fall, that that if they had him ranked, that they wouldn't pass. They wouldn't pass on him because they would see it that way. And they're not worried. You know, I kind of asked him this too, and he said, you know, we're not worried about any firestorm or reaction that you would have if we took a quarterback. Everybody, every position has a situation, has whatever it is. So whatever that is, and maybe it's the second round. Maybe they try to replicate
Andy,
Daniel Jones, whoever it could end up being. Maybe you're trying to develop a second rounder. They've looked into that in the past. Mason Rudolph last year, when they brought in Lamar Jackson, under the thought that he could be. They've looked that way before. A guy with some things wrong, but you think you could work with him, and if you give it a year or two, that he could become the guy. That could be in play. So, but it needs to be, somebody needs to be taken and attempted to be developed as a potential backup or as a potential successor. So we'll see how that works. I have interior offensive line after that.
Yeah, I should have included guard in my.
Yeah,
because get it better,
cause Clint Bowling's in the
now.
Last year of his deal. There's going to be a big competition at left guard. Him, Christian Westerman, Trey Hopkins, Alex Redmond. All these guys are going to go into a Royal Rumble with a new position coach and see who comes out on top. You know, and Miller, you know, should be locked in at the right guard spot. And who knows, maybe there's a competition there too, but yeah, it could be.
It sounds like he's there.
Sounds like they've taken him to be the starting right guard. So I think Clint's going to have some young kids coming for him, and he's in the last year of his deal.
Yeah, I see the position that's kind of the same way. Like I said, it's okay for 2019, but there's some questions. I think this will be Clint's last season with the Bengals.
Yeah, I would think
so. Yeah, and similar to Andy needing to prove that he's a guy for the future, you know, at quarterback, you know, you've got Westerman, who has an opportunity to prove himself, and Redmond, who hasn't yet. Those two guys can maybe try to state their case, and if not, you're trying to address that then for 2020.
Yeah. So, you know, putting another guy into that mix, I think, is important. You know, Trey's on a one-year deal. Who knows what comes of him next year if someone is willing to pay him. Because, he played pretty well at center last mm-hmm. year and backing up. I mean, that's a really important thing. So, it makes we talked about this back when we talked about the Trey Hopkins tender. Why they would put a second round tender on him seemed aggressive. But because, you know, you don't want to get caught in a situation where another team saw him play center and knows he can play guard too. And it's like, all right, 4 years, 16. I mean, you saw the money that was given thrown around to linemen. How about, you know, and because you don't want to, he's not worth that to you. But so if he hits the market next year, maybe somebody gives him that, and now he's gone too. You know, it just seems like a position that needs to be spinning forward. Maybe I have them a little high. Should I move that back?
No, I don't think you.
I'm sort of talking myself into moving it back.
What do you have it at?
right after quarterback. So I have linebacker, tackle, defensive tackle, edge, quarterback, interior offensive sixth. Line. Then I have after the next two after that, corner and receiver. I probably need to move corner. See, corner I move up and down because we have the number one is set. So it's not like you – I would have a problem with them taking a corner in the first round. But Quez is on a one-year prove it. What is B.W. Webb? I don't know. Like, maybe he's going to be good. Maybe he's not. We don't know anything about those fifth-rounders. Dre is entering the back end of that deal that becomes very easy to get out of after this year if they would want to. And Dre, I think they're comfortable with him, but, you know, they you cannot have enough corners in this league. So I wonder about that position, too. Maybe that needs – maybe receiver needs to hop in front of them. Does receiver need to go in front of both of them?
I think corner should be ahead of receiver. Because yeah. I think this A.J. deal is sounds
AJ
like
A.J. and Boyd are going to be locked right. in for the so, long term, whereas at corner, William will be locked in
William's
for the long term.
Locking guy.
He will be. But after that, nobody's locked in.
Right. And, so I would put corner ahead of receiver.
And you need four corners more than you need four receivers, in my opinion. All right. But do they both need to go over interior offensive line by positional need? Because you have Billy Price, who you put a first-round pick in. You got a bunch of kids competing. You just signed a right guard. For
I
3 years.
I keep right guard ahead of those other two. I keep interior offensive line ahead of those two.
All right. It's close. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a question mark next to that.
Well, we've got 3 more weeks to keep changing our minds.
No, we don't. The series starts very soon. It's a 12-part series. That's like 2 whole weeks. It's very long. It's arduous.
Well, we've got 4 parts that we feel pretty confident about, so we can change our minds.
So we know what's in the what I have in the back. I think, and then tight end I have after that, so which you mentioned. Tight end is just so interesting because you're still drafting for the future. Because you really only have, if you're talking about the future, you have one. Well, you have 1.5. You have whatever Tyler Eifert's going to give you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the Croft spot open. Mason Schreck is around, whatever he could be. Jordan Franks, if that does anything for you, maybe they get more out of him. But that third tight end, potentially needed as a second tight end, potentially more dynamic so that CJ's your second tight end. You know, I keep going back to some of the stuff that we heard from Brian Callahan of, you know, we don't feel like you have to have, you know, Gronk or Travis Kelce or that in this offense. You need to have somebody who truly is above average at multiple things.
And that's why CJ made so much sense.
Right. But also, what if a guy was dynamic at both of those things, like TJ Hockenson?
Right.
Isn't that a significant weapon? You know, it's like a lot of these tight ends get drafted high because they're great receiving tight ends. These dudes that come out of Iowa, Hockenson, Noah Fant, who are going to be first-round tight ends, man, they can knock some heads around already. I mean, they are intense finishers at the line of scrimmage, and then they go out and make plays catching the ball. So when we get into the first-round discussion, Hockenson is intriguing. We talk about need versus BPA. I think he would be on the BPA side. Maybe the need isn't as good. You know, we have them all the way down here, and you know, you got CJ and Tyler and whatever they're going to be. But TJ Hockenson would be your starting tight end for the next 5 years. And versatile, can block people down, can make big plays in the passing game. That could be really interesting thing to watch at that position. I have it down there further because I don't think it's as valued as some of the other ones that we mentioned. Similar need, but not similar value of the position, in my opinion, from the organization.
Mm-hmm. And that's an opinion that you sort of have solidified after, like you said, Brian Callahan's views on tight end. And I think we heard some of those similar things from Zach, I believe, at the Combine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they both kind of said a lot of that type of stuff. And that was a lot of that was in relation to discussing Tyler Eifert. You know, and certainly if you have 2 to 3 dynamic tight ends out there, you're going to use them. You use whatever your personnel has. I mean, the system can morph. You know, I don't think the Rams, I heard a lot of talk about this when I was at the Super Bowl. The Rams offense did not intend to be 95% of plays the same formation with 3 wides and a single tight end and Todd Gurley or whatever, whoever the running back was. That was just the way they morphed their personnel. It was what they found they were most effective in, so they just kept doing stuff out of it. You find whatever you're most effective in, and you utilize that. So if CJ and Tyler or whatever is where you're most effective, then you'll utilize that more. If you have TJ Hockenson, you'll utilize him more. You know, you figure out what your personnel fits best. Nothing says that you want to be running the same formation over and over. That's not necessarily a staple of this offense. Look at this offense in San Francisco, what it did for George Kittle. Good God, right? Kyle Shanahan runs the same scheme, sees George Kittle turning into a star. I mean, they turned him into a star. A really great tight end can be an unbelievable weapon, an all-pro weapon in that offense. That could be what TJ Hockenson could be if they went that direction. So the back end, that leaves running back, safety, and special teams. That's what I have at the – I mean, I don't – you've got Joe Mixon for 2 more years. You have Gio in the last year of his contract, whatever Mark Walton might end up being. But you can always draft a running back and plug and play at any point. Or not draft Philip Lindsay. Mm-hmm. or undrafted, get a running back and watch him go. You have 2 great running backs at a position where you can fix it instantaneously if something were to happen down the road. You don't think much about the future there. There's lots of great running backs that come out. I'm not messing with that.
And philosophically, you've stayed consistent about how much you should invest in a running back.
I mean, I think teams are staying consistent.
Right.
It's proven over and over again. Safety. You can make an argument for another safety, probably. I probably should put safety in front of running back.
I think safety should be ahead of running back. I mean, you just invested a second-round pick with Jesse Bates, and that hit. And I think
they really like Sean.
They love Sean, and then I think Fedge has proven himself to be such a great special teams guy, and he grades out really well in his limited playing time when he's on the field on defense.
Yeah, you're not freaking out when Fedge comes in.
You don't want him out there, 95% of the defensive plays, but
if you've got to play 3 or 4 games because of injury,
fine.
Yeah, you're okay with him. And even, who knows what will come of Brandon Wilson. You hope maybe he could develop. But so you could take another one.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about a 4th safety here. You could argue that maybe they should be looking, and maybe they will once they're able to get their hands on these guys when they come in, that you can start to see, maybe we move Sean to the hybrid linebacker role, what Landon Collins did a lot of for. Maybe they do that. Maybe Lou Anarumo sees Sean play and he says, man, should we consider this? And then safety moves up the board because then you'd want another one behind him if you're going to consider doing some of that with Sean. I'm curious to see how they view him. A lot of that stuff is they feel like they need to see him in person and see him do stuff to get a feel for what they think they can do. But it'd be something to consider. If you're going outside of the box and you're talking about new school NFL, that would be something to consider, considering the way he plays.
And talking about personnel with the way the linebacker situation is.
It might be necessary. So, yeah, very interesting. All right, and special teams, Hubes, do we really want another Jake Elliott situation?
Nope.
I mean, no, I don't have a problem with a Jake Elliott situation. I have a problem with drafting another kicker. One or two kickers get drafted. There's a bunch of undrafted guys out there that could be something to come in and compete in camp. I got no problem with competing with Rainey Bullock, obviously. But there's no need to go picking anybody. Clark Harris, safe.
Yep.
So I don't expect to see anybody in special teams. So that wraps it up. We did it. We did it. Although I still have a question mark left on interior offensive line, whether I should move that back. I guess we'll leave it.
Yeah, I think that, like I said, I assigned everything a 1 through 10, and I kind of just kept it at like 10, 7, 5. And you got two 10s, clearly. And then then that just that group in the middle, it's just there's a lot of questions that need to be answered for 2020. And that group in the middle, I think they can really do some work there.
Yeah, you're right. You wish that there weren't so many in the middle. You wish that like two of those positions in the middle were down there with safety and running back, but they're not.
And that's what brings up the best available versus pressing need, which is there's a lot of philosophical things there. But in this moment, I mean, there's a lot of these positions that you could take best available because there's not a lot of those groups that you feel good beyond 2020.
Yeah, and there, like we said, there will be some best available in those top four, and that's if you're putting two and two together, you know, you can get a good feel for where those pick will probably come from. And who knows? Maybe there's a shocker. You never with a new coach and new voices and new people. We don't know. You know, the interesting thing, and I'll wrap it up, and we'll get to Ryan Wilson. You don't know how much in the conversations that Zach Taylor and the hiring committee and in the back rooms have been about how they do view the future of the quarterback position. We just don't know. And they will not. That's not something they would ever want to put out there. Why would you? You know, there we know teams that are doing work on quarterbacks, and the Bengals are going to do everything in their power to not have any of the work that they're doing on players get out there. So sometimes it does. We have not seen them associated with any of the top quarterbacks whereas we know in the past they brought Lamar Jackson in, right? So we'll see what happens with that. You know, they were at pro days and stuff, but, you know, guys go to pro days. That's something that we probably won't find out until the pick is announced at 11, if how serious they are about making the find your Patrick Mahomes this year move. And that may be something that they haven't hashed out yet. Like we said, they haven't even started their meetings where they really sit down and hash it all out and make sure everybody's on the same page. Maybe that's part of it. All right. So that's going to wrap it up for our portion here. We have Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports. You can check his mock drafts out every Monday over at cbssports.com. And amongst many other things they have over there, they do a great job. So I'm going to go ahead and bring that in, and then after that, we'll be back next week with players back in town in the first day of the Zach Taylor era sort of officially beginning inside of the stadium. So we'll have you some live stuff from inside there next week. Look forward to bringing that to you. It's been great. Here is myself and Ryan Wilson talking about some of the dynamics in the top 10 of the draft. Have a good one, everybody.
It's officially draft podcast season on the BBT, and I felt like there's no better way to really look at the Bengals at 11 and everybody wants to talk about the first-round pick. We got to understand the dynamics of what's happening in front of the Bengals in the top 10, what could happen, what might not happen, and what better place to go than to someone who has done 30 mock drafts
Why are you laughing?
I know. It's just a life. It's a life that people that listen to the BBP love to rip on me for how much I despise the idea of mock drafts. And so people I hope understand how much I think this is totally comical that you've had to do 30 mock drafts since September. Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports. What's up, buddy?
Hey, man. It's good to talk to you. We go way back, actually.
We do go way back to shoot, that goes back to like the Indianapolis Super Bowl in
2011.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah, when I was doing stuff for CBS, I got called up I-74 to come help y'all out, and we had a good old time.
By the way, not far enough back where we both had hair, though.
No, was far enough back where Jared from Subway was still, like, cool and fun to talk about. Yeah.
That's right. We actually saw him at giving a bro hug to Plexico Burris.
Yes. Greatest bro hug I've ever witnessed. Plexico Burris. Fresh off jail, I believe, at that point. Or was that?
Yeah, he wasn't limping.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember if that was pre or post jail for Plexico. But
it was pre jail for Jared, I can tell you that.
It was. Oh man, it was good. That's how far back we go. We go way back. I'm glad you are making the appearances at the national events. Like, it kind of goes on and off sometimes, but you're at the Super Bowl, you're at the Combine, you did Senior Bowl all this year. So either you're just dying to get out of your house, or you're really dedicated this year.
Yeah, a little both. We were talking before we started recording that once you have kids, you look for every reason you can come up with to get out of the house. So I my thought was, let's go to Alabama in January because I don't want to be home with my kids.
Sounds perfect. But let's dive in a little bit. So you have your, let's call it your mock draft 30.0 potentially.
not even wrong.
Is out. It's at three. This is the first of your three rounders, though. So we've reached the last phase. Or are you going to do all seven rounds at some point?
And in two weeks, Paul, I will have a seven rounder coming out. So I will probably start working on that tomorrow.
It's a special level of sadness that it takes. Oh,
it really is.
I love it. But you see, the first of the three rounders, and I mean, I don't think people quite understand how much time it takes to do this stuff realistically when you get into everybody's situations, who has contracts, who has, needs at certain places, who will throw their needs out the window. And I mean, it's crazy. But you could pretty much do this top 11 in your sleep at this point, right?
Yeah, you know what's funny? Like, when you talk to scouts and you talk to area scouts that they're for, say, the Southeast, and you ask them about a player, and they're like, I don't have that guy. Meanwhile, I need to know sort of something about, not to the level that NFL teams do, but I need to have some idea of whether this player can tackle people or whether he's fast or whatever. So, right, this is one man, not that smart, that they've asked to do a three-round mock draft. But, right, you do it 30 times, you think something would stick. So, right, I feel like the top 11, I could probably do in my sleep. But, of course, the issue is, are there going to be trades? There almost certainly will be trades. And you wonder if there's going to be a team that really loves either Kyler Murray in number one or maybe Nick Bosa in number one, and they want to move up, and they'll have the Cardinals, who have the first overall pick, to trade down. And I think that's the most compelling story right now, but I feel like there could be other stories probably centered mostly around the quarterbacks going in the top 11.
Yeah, that is really interesting because now, everything I assume is a smokescreen, and I love when people are saying, oh, no, it's clear now the Giants are not interested in Dwayne Haskins, or it's clear now that the Cardinals are not going to take Kyler Murray. Like, obviously, everyone's trying to drive some agenda or whatever. I mean, how real do you think is, if you had a gun to your head pick, do the Cardinals take Murray or do they trade out at this point? Which direction do you think it goes?
I think it's more than 50% they're taking Kyler Murray. And here's what I don't agree with it. I love Kyler Murray. He's probably, I hesitate, but he's my number one quarterback. He and Dwayne Haskins really close to me, but they're similar in terms of grades, completely dissimilar in terms of how they play. But Cliff Kingsbury, who we know back in October when he was at Texas Tech before he got fired there, said that he would take Kyler Murray with the first overall pick. And I think it was sort of just an off-the-cuff conversation because he had no idea he'd be an NFL coach or that Kyler Murray wasn't going to play Major League Baseball. But when Cliff Kingsbury got hired to coach the Cardinals, Kyler Murray still hadn't made his decision about Major League Baseball. And I think we were mostly thinking that he was going to play Major League Baseball. I would imagine that conversation with the ownership, the Bidwells in Arizona, it wasn't, hey, what do you think about trying to convince Kyler Murray to play football? It was, how are you going to fix Josh Rosen after his horrible rookie season, due mostly to Steve Wilkes being a terrible head coach? And I'm guessing he answered that question and he sold him on that idea. So it's weird to me that they've gone from that and then 6 or 8 weeks later, however long it was, until Kyler declared that he's playing football, that they just did a 180. I don't think it's all Cliff Kingsbury's doing. I think some of it is the Bidwells sort of distracted by shiny object syndrome. But it's just a weird sort of dynamic. And I don't think taking Kyler Murray makes your football team better than it was last year when you could just keep Josh Rosen and draft an offensive lineman. You could draft Nick Bosa. You could circle back and round two, the top around two, and get another player to help you, a wide receiver, whatever. So, but I think this is the road we're going down unless there's some team that falls in love with Kyler Murray and wants to move up.
Yeah. What do you – I mean, how does that affect the dynamics? Because here's the thing. From a Bengals perspective, Kyler Murray is going in the top 10, right, somewhere. I mean, this would be Aaron Rodgersian type of fall if we really saw Kyler Murray. I mean, there's no chance that he is going to fall. And I'll throw in there on top of that, is there a chance that Dwayne Haskins could be the guy that free falls and is sitting there at 11 potentially?
Yeah, no, that's right. I think Dwayne Haskins makes some sense. I didn't even think about Kyler Murray to the Bengals. So Bengals fans are actually entertained. They would absolutely love to have Kyler Murray. I would imagine that.
Any quarterback. Bengals fans would take any quarterback. Well, and the Bengals are in a position. I mean, the Bengals are in a position right now with Dalton in the last 2 years of his contract where they are planning what does the next contract look like. And they're, you know, and that could be an extension for Andy Dalton, or it could be you know, somebody who they pick right now and they try to find their Patrick Mahomes, so to speak, which I think a lot of teams are looking for right now. So if they were in love with one of those two guys, the question is, I don't know that they would be willing to move up. Maybe they would. I don't know. But it's mainly a matter of if they fall. So do you think it's possible?
Yeah. So here's a couple things to continue the smokescreen conversation we're having. So Mark Ross, former VP executive for the Giants, said a few weeks ago on NFL Network that the Giants at number 6 are targeting an edge rusher. Okay, there's maybe a smokescreen, maybe some treats to that. They need an edge rusher. They traded Olivier Vernon to the Browns. And then Mike Lombardi, former NFL executive working for the Patriots, worked for the Browns, said shortly after that on NFL Network that they're not even looking at Kyler Murray, the Giants. They're not even looking at Dwayne Haskins. So to say that they are is to misrepresent what's possibly going to happen in the draft. Okay, fine. Dan Rossini, ESPN, reported days later, the Giants aren't even scouting Dwayne Haskins. That's how disinterested they are in Dwayne Haskins. And then at the Kyler Murray Pro Day in Oklahoma, there's Pat Shurmur, literally 12 feet away from Kyler Murray. A week later, they're all over Ohio State. They're meeting with him before Dwayne Haskins, before the Pro Day. So it's not clear. And I think they clearly need a quarterback. We know that. But it's not clear whether they'll do it at 6. And if they don't do it at 6, then I think there's going to be a conversation how far he falls. Now, the Broncos need a quarterback at 10. And I don't know, you would know certainly better than me, Paul, but I don't know if the Bengals would be willing to leapfrog the Broncos to get Dwayne Haskins. I think Dwayne Haskins is a really good quarterback. I love the way he plays. He's not Kyler Murray. He's not going to run around. But he can move inside the pocket. He's athletic, more athletic than he looks anyway. So there's a chance. The problem is if he gets past New York, which he could, it becomes what are the Broncos going to do? Are they going to take Dwayne Haskins? We hear conversations about John Elway loving Drew Lock. Would they take him there? Would they do something completely different? And I'll just say one more thing. In my 3-round mock draft that just came out Monday morning, I have the Bengals taking a quarterback in round 2. I have them taking offensive lineman. We'll talk about that in a minute.
You have Jonah Williams in the first pick and Daniel Jones at 42. Yeah.
Daniel Jones in round 2. And I don't know a lot about what Zach Taylor's going to do, but Daniel Jones is a guy that reminds a lot of people of Eli Manning, good version. He makes some good decisions. He makes some bad decisions. When you talk to scouts, they say, are those bad decisions a function of playing in a terrible sort of Duke offense, or is that something that's inherent to what Daniel Jones does? But a lot of teams like him. I don't know if he'll be there in the middle of the second round. But so there's a possibility that Haskins falls. Do the Bengals want to trade up and get him, or do they want to wait?
It's an interesting dynamic because you're talking about Daniel Jones potentially, the successor to Andy Dalton, when this is how they got Andy Dalton, by holding tight, taking
right.
the best player available at 4 and A.J. Green and waiting for Andy Dalton in the second round in what was one of the most productive drafts in Bengals history that set up a run of 5 straight trips to the playoffs. So it's kind of an interesting thought along those lines. You know, I'm of the opinion, just because teams always jump and reach and trade up for quarterbacks that we will see three QBs go in the top 10. I think Locke ends up in the top 10. I think you will see, whether it's Cardinals or somebody that trades up to get Kyler Murray, I think the Giants or somebody that trades up to get Dwayne Haskins, and I think the Broncos, if Locke is sitting there, will go for it. And we're not even thinking about, because in previous years, right, we've seen teams jump all the way from the mid-20s. So you could get one of these teams, maybe the Raiders come all the way up. I mean, Lord knows they've got the draft capital. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities that teams will make big moves that we're not even talking about. And the only time you ever really do that is for a quarterback.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, a few years ago when the Chiefs did it for Patrick Mahomes, people were like, okay, this seems crazy. Because Patrick Mahomes was considered sort of a loose cannon in college. No one thought he was going to be the quarterback he was. That paid off. But rarely it doesn't. Rarely you trade it for these guys, and usually it doesn't work out. And I think the good news is for the Bengals is that all this craziness doesn't necessarily have to affect you, because you can sit there and you're – I haven't taken Jonah Williams there because I had both inside linebackers being gone at that point. I think Devin White's definitely going to go in top 10. I think people are starting to lump to Devin Bush, and I wouldn't be surprised if he sneaks in there. In fact, I know that some teams like Devin Bush better than Devin White, which is you don't hear a lot about. But I feel like there's a run on quarterbacks, which I don't have in this mock draft because I refuse to do trades because, you know, 8 hours is enough for one mock draft.
When you do 30 mock drafts, you've got to draw a line in the sand and stand for
that's
something.
That's right. Yeah. But I think there's an opportunity for the Devin Whites or Devin Bushes to fall for an offensive lineman. I don't know how Bengals fans feel about taking an offensive lineman. I know they're not crazy about Bobby Hart being re-signed. So,
no. I think everyone in the world knows that fact at this point. I guess there's probably like maybe five people in the world who are crazy about Bobby Hart being re-signed, and I thought
all last name
work for the Bengals. Yeah, all last name or his current offensive line coach. I think that's about it. So let's talk about the Devons. You have them. I mean, you have Devin White at 4 and Devin Bush at 5 to the Buccaneers. I mean, Bush at 5 is. I mean, that's way up there. I mean, do you?
Yeah.
Do you? What is it that's pushing you to put him all the way up there to Tampa Bay? Obviously, they have a linebacker need, but
yeah, I think the Buccaneers actually really like Devin White, but I have the Raiders taking Devin White to pick before number 4. They need help at inside. They need help everywhere. And this is sort of a crazy mock draft because Quinnen Williams falls all the way to the Bills at number 9, and I can't imagine that's happening. But this is maybe a scenario where it does because the Raiders decide let's get Devin White. He's a fantastic athlete. But I think if they go Quinnen Williams, for example, then the Bucs will get Devin Bush. They like Devin White. They like better, and Bush can fall, and Bush can certainly fall to 11. And here's the thing: Steelers fans would love to get Devin Bush. Steelers front office would love to get Devin Bush, but I don't think he's going to be there at 20. I feel like if he's available for the Bengals, and the quarterbacks are gone, and they don't want one of those guys, I think you take Devin Bush over a lot of other options. Certainly, Jonah Williams. I like Jonah Williams, but I think Devin Bush is more dynamic. He helps right away. We had a defense with an issue last year that got rid of Burbick. The remaining interior guys, I don't think they were great. You know better than me in terms of being sort of guys you can turn to as a center of a defense to sort of rebuild this thing. But that's my thinking there with the Raiders sort of mixing up, taking Devin White early. But I feel like it's more likely they pass on him. He goes to the Buccaneers at number 5. They have a couple needs. They can take offensive lineman there too if you're the Buccaneers. And I suppose there's a chance that both Devons and linebackers drop out of the top 10, but that seems unlikely just given how athletic and how good they've actually tested over the last few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, and this is, I always take Bengals fans to really dark places when I bring up the John Ross draft, but it's the last time that they were up this high. And, you know, there were a lot of really good players available at number 9. And I remember we had spent so long talking about who would they take at 9, and there was, you know, O.J. Howard, and there's Mahomes, and there was Deshaun Watson, and there was Malik Hooker, and there's Marshawn Lattimore, and all these players that a lot of people say, well, they wouldn't all be available, yet there they all were waiting on them, and they ended up taking John Ross, I feel like you're always surprised, man, I never thought they would have all of these options available, because when you are up this high, like, and teams just, they fall in love and they say, trust my evaluation. And suddenly Quinnen Williams is there at 9 and people are shocked. I feel like that type of stuff can happen. Who of Quinnen Williams, outside of him, who of this, of what's considered the premier crop, do you think is most likely to have a free fall where no one thought they would be around, you know, when you get into the early teens.
Ed Oliver could be there. I don't know if he's considered more of a free faller now than he was, because at the start of the college football season, it was Nick Bosa number one, Ed Oliver number two. Ed Oliver's hurt a little bit during the season in Houston. They had the whole Puffy Coatgate incident with Major Applewhite, where they're yelling at him about wanting to go to the sideline.
Puffy Coatgate. Just gate it. Just throw a gate on it and it works.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think that really had any weight with NFL coaches and NFL teams. Applewhite got fired, so clearly it wasn't that big a deal. But he didn't work out at the combine. Then he showed up at his pro day and he ran a 4.71, and that sort of gets your attention when you weigh 281 pounds. He's a guy that could slip to the middle of the first round, but he's a top five talent. The issue is he was out of play that position at Houston. He played over the center. He's 281, and he still dominated, but he's not going to be in the NFL. He'll be more of like a three technique, shooting gaps and wreaking havoc that way. I think the issue is people compare him to Aaron Donald, and that's sort of unfair to him. But I think he's a really good player. But he could go 14 to the Falcons, perhaps, and that could be some surprise. But he could also go top 10, which I think also makes sense. But as you point out, at this point for season, Paul, it's like you reason about drafts, and there are like 50 first-round picks. So not everyone's going to be able to go in the first round, and then you're going to be surprised if one of those 50 fall to 28 or whatever, and you're like, well, it's just how the numbers work. But I feel like Oliver, if Quinnen Williams falls to 9, that would be a huge – I think that's a huge deal. But I think Oliver would be more likely to slip of the top 10 guys I'm sort of looking at.
Yeah, he's a really interesting one from a Bengals perspective where, 281 is probably a little small for what they're looking for, you also get into the situation where the Luana Rumo, the Bengals' new DC, is talking about being very multiple and giving more 3-4 looks and a versatile guy like Oliver who has played all over, can play all over the place because of his freakish athleticism, you wonder about. I don't know if he's big enough for what they inherently want. Some other guys that you have up here in the top 10, let's just run through some needs and where you think they go to kind of give a snapshot. You've talked about the Broncos. We've talked a lot about the Giants in that top five. Let's run through the Jags, the Lions, and the Bills. What the hell's going on there? These teams are weird. Like they do weird things in drafts, like consistently. They're all over the map, and I think they're kind of hard to peg down. What do you view as their needs, and what is there to watch for them? Maybe would any of them go? Because I think defensive front seven is the most snug fit for the Bengals. I mean, would anyone of them steal somebody off the board there?
Yeah, no. The Jaguars, the Lions, and the Bills could all get front four guys in defense. But here's the thing: if I'm the Jaguars, I'm drafting a quarterback. But they think Nick Foles is going to magically fix everything now, which I don't get, but whatever. So if they're taking Nick Foles, I think they're more inclined to take – I haven't taken T.J. Hockenson in one previous mock draft. I didn't in Iowa, who people have compared to Gronkowski. I think he's more like Travis Kelce. Cincy guy, right?
No, yeah, yeah. University of Cincinnati, yeah. That's correct. Yeah, he got suspended
right
there. That was his claim. he played great there. I mean, he was a third-round pick in that draft. I'm telling you, tight ends, it's like these ones that get drafted in the top are rarely the ones that end up being the game changers.
That's
it happens,
right.
But it's, I mean, you see, you know, the Bengals knows more than anybody. I mean, they took Jermaine Gresham during the Rob Gronkowski draft. And, well, I guess history's kind of told that story.
Yeah, but this draft is actually really deep at tight end, and that's something the Bengals are probably looking at, I would imagine. But T.J. Hockenson had him going to Jacksonville at 1 point. Juwan Taylor, the right tackle at Florida, he's really good. It's another first-round pick to protect Nick Foles. And then if I'm taking Montez Sweat in previous mock drafts, because they do need help along the defensive line. Same with the Lions. I've had him taking defensive line help. Rashawn Gary's sort of a popular one to Detroit. He played in Michigan. Question is, I mean, he's insanely athletic. He was played out of position at Michigan, and his production wasn't there. You watch him play sometimes, you're like, okay, this doesn't make sense. But then I think he ran like a 4.58 or something insane at the combine. He's 280, 6'4". So you put him on the edge and just let him be an athlete. And the Bills, they're sort of all over the place. Kyle Williams, their defensive tackle, retired. So if Quinn Williams were there, that would make a ton of sense. Ed Oliver would make sense there. But they need help also at wide receiver. And I've had them taking DK Metcalf in the top 10 in recent mock drafts. But you're right, they're all over the board, these teams, because they're, number one, not very good and have a lot of needs, and it's sort of hard to peg down what they're doing. The Lions are now, you know, sort of Patriots Midwest in terms of their coach and their general manager, and they've signed a bunch of Patriots players, Trey Flowers and Danny Amendola. But I think they need to fix that defense, given that Matt Patricia is supposed to be a defensive genius, quote-unquote, and they haven't really played that well. But I'll keep repeating. I think the Bengals are set up to get a really good player, and you sort of hit on it, Paul. It's just a matter of not drafting John Ross when you get there.
Yeah. That's what it comes back to. Bengals fans are like, can we just get through a draft lead-up period where we don't have to keep reliving this over and over again? Oh, man, it's pretty unbelievable.
A lot of people love that pick at the time. I didn't get it, but, I mean, who am I?
I mean, if he plays like the projection, you get it. If he is Brandon Cooks or if he is Tyreek Hill on the field, if he plays like that, that is exactly the prototype of what the offense needed with Tyler Boyd and A.J. Green, a guy who can just stretch the field and be dynamic in the red zone or whatever at that time. So it was. I understand them having him high, but the evaluation has had problems in everything else, and the actual whether he could get in here and execute that skill set, and that has proven harder. But who knows? I mean, you get new coaches in, and maybe they look at him and figure out how to use him. So who knows what happened there? The dynamics at the top 10. It can be anything, and you know, typically we have seen the Bengals have not traded up in the first round and since Kajana Carter. And we keep mentioning really torturous picks by the Bengals. I'm sorry. So the idea of them moving up would be, hey, it would be very new era stuff. It would be you would see Zach Taylor's influence in theory instantly. The thing I could see them doing that for is if for some reason they decided that, man, I really think that one of these quarterbacks is our Patrick Mahomes, and we need to just do it. Otherwise, I think they will sit. Wait for one of these guys to come to them, and like you just kind of laid out. I mean, here's some guys in your latest mock draft that are available to the Bengals at 11. Jonah, who you have them taking, Jonah Williams, Brian Burns from Florida State, Drew Locke, Rashawn Gary. You could see them taking Montez Sweat. I mean, these are all guys that could help the Bengals in a big way in the front seven. So,
do you think they would take a tight end that high?
No, I don't. They re-signed Eifert. They re-signed C.J. Uzomah, and I think that they have. They feel like they don't need a crazy dynamic tight end for this offense to work, and they have so many other more pressing areas that I think they feel like they have that covered, even if just for a year. With the guys currently in house, so I don't see tight end. I would just be, you know. It would be pretty shocking to see them go somewhere outside of the front seven. It feels like that is where everything has fallen to. I got the sense from them that they didn't like a lot of the first round offensive tackles, which backed me off some of that. Now they may just be saying that. I think that they're looking at more of taking a second or third round pick at tackle than they are the first round, even though it would seem to fit them well. I get the feeling from them that they see the front seven as really where they can make their way with this pick.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the other thing. And that's something that you sort of figure out when you do 30-mock drafts, is that after the five sort of edge rushers, the premier edge rushers, there's a huge drop-off. So if you don't get one of those guys in the first round, you're not going to find a close facsimile in rounds two and three. And then there's a kid like Ja'Kai Polite, who was often mentioned as a first-round talent, the kid out of Florida, who had a fantastic season as an edge rusher. Showed up at the combine with some fat weight. Usually you want these kids to gain weight, and he went from 242 to 258, and most times people were like, okay, this is great for him. Apparently it wasn't the kind of weight that NFL teams are looking for. That's one thing. And then apparently the interviews were just dog-awful, and every team except for the Rams somehow came out with negative things to say about him. And then he went through the drills of the combine, and he came up halfway through after not running some great times. Same thing happened as pro day. And I think part of it is just like bad luck. The report is that he injured his hamstring in the weeks leading up to the pro day workout, and he re-injured it during the workout. And part of it is just not being prepared, whether it's your agent doing it for you or whatever. So he's like the only guy that sort of sticks out to me in rounds two or three that you can say this guy's a first-round talent as an edge rusher. Otherwise, I think the Bengals are onto something, that if you want one of these guys and you're picking 11, it doesn't make sense necessarily to take an offensive lineman there if you're not crazy about him. But Montez Sweat is there because he could be a game changer.
Yeah. So of these, of the top, you said the fall off after five, Bosa, Josh Allen, let's see,
Brian Burns,
Montez Sweat, and Rashawn Gary. That's
you got it.
Fall off.
And the fall off. Oh, and then there's Cleveland Farrell. Sorry. There's one more. Cleveland Farrell will probably go. That's we're talking about guys that could surprise. I feel like he's the bottom of the first half, like 20 to 32 guys. Some team may love him. I mean, he may go top 10. That would be a shock. But those six guys, and then the seventh is Chicago White. So, yeah, those are the guys. If you want an edge rusher,
yeah,
and Cleveland Farrell is sort of on the fringe of that conversation. Some scouts don't love the fact that he's not super bendy. But those other guys are guys you need to take in those first 15 or so picks.
I am of the opinion that every year at the Combine, as it gets more out of control with how many media members are there, we should do a actual weigh-in for media members every year, the ones that come this could help weed out all the extra media that it just crowds the whole place and makes it impossible to actually do your work. You force, basically shame them into not coming. By the day of all the interviews, every media guy has to go up in front in their underwear and weigh in. And we compare their numbers year after year so we can see who's getting fatter and fatter.
That's right. The problem is that... Media members have no shame, so they'll go up there with donuts in their hands and get weighed. They don't care.
That's what you do. You put the breakfast buffet on the other side of the scale. So the only way that you get the breakfast is if you go through the weigh-in, and then you can get the line. There is no line I have seen people more serious about in the world, that includes like airport security, than the people at the Combine for breakfast and lunch. It is like they are lined up at like 11:30 for the and that those people, those caterers, do not open it until noon. And it's just like, look, we wait till noon, and there it is. The line just forms, because you know why? Because you're not going to get the sandwich that you want, and you're not going to get the sides that you want, because they are going to hammer it through that within about a half hour.
Did you go to the owners' meeting, Paul?
Did what? Fletcher ended up doing the owners' meetings this year because he was out there. But I'm familiar with the buffets that happened there as well.
Well, I didn't go either, but I saw, I think our buddy Wilberson tweeted this out. There's a picture of them talking, of the camera showing Bill Belichick sitting at his table and reporters around him. And just over his shoulder, a few media guys going to town on some scrambled eggs in the media in the middle of, supposedly interviewing coaches, but they got their breakfast. It's go time. Do not interrupt them, and then they'll get to the jobs after that.
Yeah. Well, last week, Fletcher and I were recalling his complete awful rookie move where the morning of the coach's breakfast, he sat down, talked with Zach Taylor, showed up on time and everything, but didn't show up a half hour early and eat before the coaches talk, and tried to go get breakfast after the coaches talk. Dude, what kind of rookie world are you living in that you think there's going to be any hash browns left 5 minutes after the coaches are all done? There's no way in hell would you live in the world that we live in, where it's all free food all
great.
The time. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so rookie maneuver on Fletcher's part. All right. Well, so you have 30 mock draft. Oh, mock draft 30.0 is up, and people can see it at CBSSports.com, of course, and every Monday, right? Every Monday morning, you have a new mock draft.
Every Monday morning.
And the comical nature of a set full 7-round mock draft is on its way in 2 weeks. I'll make sure everybody checks that out. And you know what? If you see Ryan in the streets in upstate New York, give him a hug.
Hug and high five. That'll do it.
Hug and a high five, exactly. All right, Ryan, thanks for your time, man. And we will be talking to you soon.
Thank you, Paul.